Welcome to Lavender U, a community for LGBTQ plus women and femmes, where we talk about all things queer media and representation. I'm Jamie Margolin, and today on the pod, we have Sam Brinton, who is the Vice President of Advocacy at the Trevor Project. The Trevor Project is one of my absolute favorite organizations because they focus on mental health for LGBTQ plus youth, and they do so much in the world of media, working with amazing queer celebrities to promote acceptance and progress for the community. And they're also out there in the political sphere fighting for equality and making sure that laws change to protect LGBTQ people. So Sam, welcome to the pod.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, thank you. Tell me a little bit more about you, who you are, what you do, and how you got to hold this position in such a major LGBT organization.
Sure thing. So it all started with my nerdy nature. I am a nuclear physicist. I went to MIT, studied nuclear engineering and technology policy, where I learned how to disarm nuclear bombs and manage nuclear waste. And then I decided to go into the much more complicated field of LGBT politics. So I am a gender fluid individual and openly use they and them as my pronouns. I am openly bisexual, married an amazing man just a few years ago, where we have a beautiful little dog who is hopefully not going to bother me in this podcast, one can hope.
It's okay. We welcome disturbances from pets.
I think that's the best way to do it.
It's a queer podcast. Everyone's like, sorry, my four cats walked in. Apologies. You know.
Perfection. I'm a nuclear nerd who now works in LGBT politics. I'm a survivor of the dangerous and discredited practice of conversion therapy. And my campaign, working to end conversion therapy, is what brought attention of the Trevor Project to me, and I got to join to kind of amplify the work that I was doing as an activist and turn it into a career of changing the world and saving young LGBTQ lives.
That's amazing. That's so important, and that's what it is, saving lives. These aren't just like, oh, practices like conversion therapy when we talk, and we'll get more into what it is and also a little bit more about the Trevor Project and the work you do, but conversion therapy increases rates of suicide in LGBTQ youth. So we have people not just being hurt, but dying because of homophobia and homophobic practices. So what is your story in surviving conversion therapy, if you want to get into that a little bit with us, of just what is conversion therapy for those who don't know, and how are you able to turn that negative experience into advocacy to end it?
Sure. So I like to be clear that it's my right to tell my story, not someone's right to hear it. So I'm going to give you a shortened version.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's no, you don't have to get into everything. There's no, you know, it's absolutely whatever you want to say.
I appreciate that. So conversion therapy is the dangerous and discredited idea that you can change someone's sexual orientation or gender identity. It's known by a lot of different names. Conversion therapy, reparative therapy, being ex-gay, praying the gay away. A lot of experiences are done by mental health professionals. So this is doctors and psychologists telling a person that they need to change in order to be straight or cisgender. Of course, many of it is done by religious advisors who tell them that this is, you know, antithetical to their religious faith. For me, I was a young kid who didn't realize that when I told my parents that I liked the boy next door, I was coming out. I had no concept of what the words coming out were. I was simply just a young person trying to share my passion. And right. I was physically abused. I was taken to a doctor who told me horrific lies about my identity and tried to make me feel like I was alone and dejected and unable to be loved. Thankfully, I would make it through conversion therapy after some horrific physical abuse to now get to work to end conversion therapy. And to those of you who may be just realizing, oh my goodness, I didn't realize this was still happening, you should know that there are more than 700,000 Americans who say that they've gone through conversion therapy by estimate, some low estimates. In fact, according to our work at the Trevor Project, our national survey in 2021 found that 13% of LGBTQ youth said that they had experienced conversion therapy. So,
wow, that sounds a lot higher than I would think.
It's really high. We have a big problem because I think this is, to get back to a lot of the things we're going to talk about today, right, in terms of like representation, this is the idea of choice that a lot of parents still think like, oh, my kid can just no longer be LGBTQ and I'm going to make them not be LGBTQ anymore via conversion therapy. We know it doesn't work. Every major medical organization says it doesn't work. But yet it's still happening, as you just said, really way too high of rates. There's never a
single person. And it's federally legal.
It's legal in all states, except for now roughly about 20 to 25, where minors can no longer receive it from a licensed mental health professional. But in general, yes, if you are over 18, you can always receive conversion therapy. So if you're in college, you can receive conversion therapy. If you are under 18 in more than half the country, you are still absolutely legally able to be put into conversion therapy by a licensed mental health professional.
Wow.
Yep.
I think a lot of people are under this impression of like, I see the gays on my TV a lot. They're annoying. I'm sure they have rights now. You have gay marriage. Congrats. Like, there's a lot of people on the outside looking in who seem to be like, you got married in 2015. Like, be quiet and wave your little flags and go away is the general vibe. And people get very annoyed when people bring up queer issues or take it less seriously, I feel like, or something that isn't urgent or isn't crucial. What has been your experience? You know, now you're taking the negative trauma that you went through with conversion therapy and you're turning it into change, and you're working to make sure that it doesn't happen to as many queer kids as you can save from it as possible. And you do policy work. What does your policy work look like? And what have been your experiences advocating for legal changes? Have you felt any of that condescension from politicians or others who feel like it's not that urgent or it's not a big deal? Like, what has that been like?
That's a really interesting question. So I hear from politicians each and every day who first question if it's happening and then second question if it's really that bad. And I try to remind them that, and I know we're going to get into this later on, right? Like, the world isn't an episode of Glee, right? The quarterback doesn't just sing to you after you come out. You are experiencing a variety of different experiences depending on where you are, depending on your family, depending on your school, depending on your church, right? Many individuals are receiving love and support like they deserve, but many are not.
Right.
And those who've gone through conversion therapy are more than twice as likely to attempt suicide as those who have not, who LGBTQ youth, as you probably already know, are more than four times as likely to attempt suicide compared to straight young people. So you have now 8 to 10 times as likely to attempt suicide than a straight young person just because of who you are and how you love.
That is very alarming. And that's what we mean by when we say save lives when talking about LGBTQ issues, like LGBTQ policies save lives or the conversation representation save lives. When you're in that fragile of a space where your community or your parents or people around you are trying to say that who you are is wrong or disgusting or sinful, turning on the TV and seeing like queer people thriving and doing well and being the heroes or the like, yeah, being the heroes or the romantic interest or whatever, that can give people hope to cling on to. And it's not like, oh, I saw something gay on TV, so now you're officially like, it's all better and they're not going to hurt themselves or anything like that. It's not that black and white of a guarantee, but it helps. And I guess my question is, are there any studies that the Trevor Project or people have done regarding representation and research and how representation in the media, like, statistically helps?
It's really important. So at the Trevor Project, we do have this large national survey of LGBTQ mental health, the largest in the country. And in that survey, over 80% of the LGBTQ youth who we surveyed said that celebrities who are LGBTQ positively impact how they feel about being LGBTQ. Now, that's one type of representation. Let's be very clear. The opposite can be true as well. When politicians speak negatively about LGBTQ youth, there's a large percentage, way over 80 to 90%, of LGBTQ youth who said that the national politics recently affected their sense of being and mental health as well. So yes, our national survey has definitely found that representation matters, but it's also really important to recognize that representation is a, you know, two-sided coin. It is not always going to be the perfection that we're hoping it will be.
Right. And I think that it's important to also understand that negative TV shows, characters, and things that they portray. It's not that you can't have an antagonist who's queer. Like, I think camp queer villains are amazing. That's my favorite thing ever. But it's more of like when it's consistently both in fiction and in actual politics, a repeated message of queerness being bad, villainized, the person who always gets punished or dies quickest in the movie. Like, if that's, if the, there's this trope called kill your gays where queer women especially die and die violently. And so we're shown these images over and over again in movies and TV and on the news when bad things happen. That's got to have an effect on you.
It does. And I think I can speak from personal experience that until I started seeing the flamboyant, right? Until I started seeing the nerdy, right? Until I started seeing people who looked and acted like me, I didn't want to connect to those types of characters, right? Like if kill your gays is a concept that is almost now a norm, you almost don't want to associate with that norm, and therefore you kind of reject the identity. Like, well, I'm not like that. Just that way you don't have to build a mindset of the world literally doesn't want me to exist. Until I started seeing, individuals who would not only be out, but also out and successful, out and living,
right.
then I could start to say, oh, that is something that I can identify with. But I think it's really clear to people that a trope and a stereotype is helpful. Like, let's be honest, that's what it's there for. It is helping our brain really quickly notice, study, and react to an individual. It's not bad to be a stereotype. I fulfill a lot of the stereotypes, right? Like, I love me my Broadway, right? Like, I have 52 pair of stilettos, right? Like, I fulfill a lot of different of these spaces. And at the same time, I should not ever be judged by just one of them, right? I should be able to be a complex character who, yes, if I am, you know, on a TV show and I don't happen to make it, like, don't make it be anything to do with my identity. Like, have it be part of my storyline that lets me be complex. The same can be said, I think, for a lot of LGBTQ youth who are only seeing media that their parents or others allow them to access. We've got to start
right.
Remembering that, like, the ability to actually see these characters is by its very nature already limited. So if you're getting limited information and you can basically only see something if your parents are going to allow it, your parents may not allow through some of the more complex characters, in large part because those may be more complex storylines that they don't feel that you're quote-unquote ready for.
It's not appropriate for the children. The gay agenda is going to turn all my children into queers and all hell will break loose. Like, that sort of mindset
conversion therapy.
Prevalent amongst
it's
parents.
It's the idea of choice. That just by seeing or being in this space, you will choose to be this.
The same parents who think that a Disney princess being gay is going to turn your kid gay are probably the same people who would think that conversion therapy is real and effective and something that's necessary for their children. And so the underlying issue, well, yes, we need to make these policy changes and we need to have more positive representation that's more accessible and harder for parents to censor. Like, if it's on, like, The Owl House is a show on the Disney Channel. Most people have the Disney Channel, and that has a bisexual lead and a lesbian love interest, and they end up together. Sorry, spoiler alert, but if you want to go check that out, like, more things like that is important, and policy changes are important. But beyond that, there needs to be a change in the myth of choice. How do we start to change the general cultural myth all around the country and world? This is a big question. I'm not saying solve it, but I'm more posing the question.
Sure, sure, sure.
How do we change that? Because all of these paranoias all link to this one A, that being gay is bad, and or being gay, queer, trans, anything in the LGBTQ spectrum is bad and needs to be changed. That's myth one. And myth two is that it can be changed. So how do we tackle that?
Yeah, small question.
Solve it all. No, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Okay, so tackling choice politics is one of my greatest passions. And I go about it with, first off, the representation of self. So I'm a scientist. And if I could always just prove to people that this wasn't a choice, the world would be a much easier place. But you can't. To be very clear, science says that this could be both nature and nurture, a variety of things that, let's be honest, are way too complex for us to have in this afternoon conversation. What we recognize, however, is that we have personal identities. And when we explain those to others, we're able to help others a little bit understand what makes us feel safer in this world. This is the power, for example, of pronouns. So I'm not trying to get off of this space, but we have now, as you know, moved away from the idea of preferred pronouns to just, these are my pronouns. These are an identity that we help others understand. And I'm proud to say that from sitting Republican presidents to, senators from Texas, I'm able to have a variety of individuals respect my pronouns as I am because I have given them the time and grace and the education to recognize that this is how I interact with the world and how I want you to treat me with respect. That moves us into a space where people can maybe say, like, I know that LGBTQ youth who have their pronouns respected are half as likely to attempt suicide as those who do not, right? So by using someone's pronouns, I can be saving their life. That also gets you to a second piece of that puzzle, which is, this isn't a person's choice. They're not choosing to want this difficult life because of trying to explain their pronouns to you. They're choosing to be honest with you. They're choosing to share this piece of their lives with you. Now, to be very clear, Trevor Project is explicit about this. You should not come out if you do not feel safe. You should not ever feel pressured to share this honest information with anyone that you don't feel like it. But to bring us back into our politics side, the reason that I believe in this personal representation, in this identity as explanation, in this identity as education, is from one of the great LGBT politicians of our time, Harvey Milk. Harvey Milk originally come out, right? And he was using it as an example, not because he thought that it would always be safe for people. So to be very clear, you should not always do what Harvey Milk says. But in the case where you can feel safe, you are allowing people to recognize that this is not a choice, that this is something that their neighbors, their teachers, their pastors, their grocery store workers.
It's the
and
people that they love. It's not those gays on the TV turning all the kids gay.
Exactly.
It's my child, my cousin.
It is much harder to keep a family member, a friend out of the house than it is to keep Glee or Owl House off of the TV. It is so much more difficult to erase us when we are in person. And that is why representation has to be complex. It has to be both the people you see on TV, but also the people down the street. That is a variety of forms of representation that honestly, in the end, that is how politics is made. If I, as a person who is just in front of them on a day-to-day basis, can say, this is my experience, and you trust me, you know that I am sharing good information with you, that is representation. Representation is not just a TV screen. It's information. It's education of our lived experiences.
You know, I get emotional when I see queer women, especially, well, queer anyone thriving, especially like above a certain age. I have a lot of like classmates that are queer. Like, I'm never shocked when I see a queer teenager. Like, that's half of New York, you know? So I'm not like, oh my God, another queer teen. But I am when I see adults, because of I've realized I never see older queer people hardly out. And I saw this lesbian couple with their children, and they were both Latina and speaking Spanish. And I wanted to like cry because I'm a very proud Colombian, and I have like some traditional dreams of like wanting to get married in a gay way, of course. And you know, have that like family. And I thought that I never saw like especially two Latino women. And it wasn't on my TV screen. It was just a family in New York that is a possibility for my future. Like, oh, I can make it as an adult. I'm not just like a strange, nerdy, queer teen that will remain this way forever, I guess. Like, there is hope. Like, I can have a family if I want to in the future. And I can also embrace my culture. And it's not anti-Colombian or anti-Latinx to be myself. And this family was a lesbian mothers raising their children in the culture, speaking Spanish. Like, it was so beautiful for me to see. And that was really powerful. That was representation.
Exactly. That was absolutely representation. And I'm so seeing your joy as you were even talking about that. Is palpable, right? Like, it's so clear to me that I get to go to universities around the country. Well, I did before COVID. I got to go to universities around.
Are you virtually going to universities?
I am not really getting to as much anymore, but getting to have conversations with students and letting them know that, like, you can use they and them pronouns and walk the halls of Congress, right? You can use MX as instead of Mr. or Mrs. and get married, right? Like, these are spaces that I get to kind of enter and
the officialness
in.
Of it.
The officialness, yeah. Exactly.
There's something tangible real. About the legal official acknowledgement of us, you know.
Amen. We're not going anywhere. Representation is also
we're not
about,
going anywhere.
Historical consistency. Representation is both on a screen in art form, right? It is internalized as we see it on the street, but it is also held in history as we get to actually live our lives and let the next generation live a little bit easier life because of that representation. So representation is so complex in those spaces because it is not just our future, right, of, like, internalization. It's also our past. We are represented by stories that our ancestors, our queer ancestors, told us, and they tell us through art forms, right? This is an important way to get it across. But it's also, you know, by word of mouth. I get to sing, so I'm a singer. Along with being a nuclear engineer,
oh,
I'm a trained opera singer. So I get to sing in the Kennedy Center.
Oh, amazing!
Love it. And
opera singer, I love that. I love that for you. You're like a scientist in opera. You're so talented, and you do policy. For any queer kids thinking like, oh, I can't be successful in the world with using they/them pronouns, or I can't be successful in the world as a queer person. Sam is an opera singer. And a scientist, like what exact science? It was a very
nuclear,
smart science.
Nuclear scientist, yes.
Nuclear scientist, yes. Sorry, my film school brain can only retain a certain level of scientific information.
No, stop. You can retain way more.
I know. I'm kidding. But nuclear scientist and has great lighting set up for Zoom. You guys can't see it, but like fashion matches the background. Like you can have it all together as a queer adult in life and be hired by an incredible organization like the Trevor Project and do policy.
Honored to live a
you
life.
You are the representation.
Honored to live a life. I it's interesting that you say this because I look to others to represent, right? I don't want to necessarily always be the representation because I know that I'm living a life of privilege, right? Although I am mixed race. I am come from an indigenous background. I am very clear that I am white presenting, and it has been an easier life. I am also recognized that I was raised in as a boy. I don't identify that any longer. I definitely identify as a non-binary and more femme on the non-binary side. Obviously, I was definitely raised as straight because of conversion therapy. But as openly bisexual, I'm getting erased by both sides, both LGBTQ
right.
people and a straight individual. So it's a fascinating world of representation, but I appreciate the very kind compliments. It's very, very kind of you.
Yeah. So are there any like celebrities, artists, or media, you know, we talked about in-person things that have influenced you, but are there any like TV shows or recommendations that you have for people who were growing up or just anything, whether it's a celebrity, whether it's like a moment in gay media history that helped you and gave you hope or got you through some of the times when, you know, you were not as thriving as you are now. I don't want to assume
thrivingness,
it seems thriving in
the outside. I'll take it. Like, be the thrive you wish to be.
Be the thrive you wish to be.
It's probably not popular, and so I'll be very clear. I recognize that it comes with historical context. The shows that really, like, helped me come out and see myself were Queer as Folk and Will and Grace. They haven't always aged well. They haven't always aged perfectly, but I was the kid in Kansas who thought I was completely alone, and two of my, what I like to call my lesbian moms, sat on either side of me with popcorn, and we watched television where I could see people who were flamboyant, and I was a lot of energy. I had just founded the first LGBT resource center in the state of Kansas. Wow. I was so excited that there were other people like me, and I was seeing myself on television literally physically surrounded by these amazing, you know, lesbian women who were saying, you know what, we can't give you everything. There's not a lot of representation around you here in Kansas, but here is something, right? Here is something that will show you a way to live your life. Those have been really, really impactful. Of course, there is nothing like, I'm a nerd, right? So Star Trek, the recent Star Trek work that has actually had openly gay and non-binary characters, world-changing. See yourself as a scientist, to see the nerd get to kiss his husband, to see the nerd save the ship, and then also use they/them pronouns, like,
that's amazing. Right?
Like, that's the dream. I would say, of course, Pose. I am so proud that Trevor Project honored the cast of Pose for their representation at our one of our events a few years ago. And to sit
in the before times.
In the before times, exactly. Yeah. And to sit at a table with them, and, you know, as a non-binary person, I don't get to see a lot of people who look like me on television or in books, or, you know, this is not a common space for me. And to talk to, you know, these trans women of color who also just understand a little bit about what that erasure feels like, to say, right, like, it's kind of weird to be on a stage, right? Like, I'm so honored by the things you've been saying about me, but, like, it is kind of weird to be the representation, because you are so commonly not seeing it and not feeling it, that when it does happen, you're like, is this real? Like, this doesn't feel quite real. And to have that moment with them as celebrities was like, oh, wow, okay, so I'm not the only one feeling this. I'm not the only one feeling like I'm an imposter for being representation. I think those are all really amazing artists. Obviously, Demi Lovato, Sam Smith. The more artists that start to use they/them as pronouns every single time, I am, like, very ready for Sam Smith and myself to, like, perform together as a singer. Like, I'm very ready for the they/them Sams to, like, take over the world.
The they/them Sams. Oh, my gosh. Sam Smith, if by any chance you're listening to Lavender U, I highly doubt that you are. But if anyone listening is like, oh my God, I'm Sam Smith's, like, bestie, what a coincidence, and shows this to Sam Smith, there is another they/them Sam. Sam Brinton would like to collaborate with you and is an opera singer and nuclear scientist and does amazing work with the Trevor Project to save lives of LGBTQ kids and ban conversion therapy. Sam Smith's friend listening, maybe.
I love this. Look at this. We just changed the world. I love the little bit of change that we just made.
Manifesting.
We're going to do
putting
it.
Putting the vibes it. Into the world, in the universe. Lastly, I guess, so talking about representation, so a lot of people, just for those who don't know a lot about the Trevor Project grew out of a 1998 Oscar-winning short film called Trevor on HBO, and the writers and producers secured funding to create the first ever nationwide 24-hour crisis suicide/prevention hotline for LGBTQ and questioning youth, which launched the same night as the movie premiered. And since then, the Trevor Project has launched even more services to help queer youth. So for those listening who are like, what is this Trevor Project you speak of? That is what it is, and that is how it got started. And it's a perfect example of art and activism coming together to create massive impact in both the film world and the art world and in the world of actual people's lives who are calling a literal hotline. And it's a crisis center, and so many lives were and continue to be saved by those resources.
So many. This year, we're on track to serve almost 250,000 LGBTQ youth who will reach out to us in crisis. And to think that 20 years ago, Ellen DeGeneres has just come out, right? She gets, talk about representation and like how it was affecting someone's life, right? This was a big, big deal. She comes on, she speaks about the importance of the type of film, a short film about a boy named Trevor who loves them some Diana Ross, who doesn't? I mean, honestly, right? But is feeling a little bit lost and dejected and left out, is instead now given support. And I love that something like a short film about a boy who loves Diana Ross and needs to find their way in the world starts something that saves so many young people each and every year by just being there to listen, right? I think that was the really exciting part for me for Trevor Project, is I get to join it after having called. Now, I didn't call 20 years ago, right? But about 10, right? A little bit more. I was the kid in Kansas calling the Trevor Project, feeling lost and alone. And now I get to be
That's
on the other side of that phone.
That's a full circle moment.
Right? What
That's
an amazing...
Such a, like...
Circle.
Wow.
It's the circle yeah. of life, right?
Yes, those opera vocals.
But it is. That is the story of Trevor, of being there and listening, right? These were creators, artists who said, our product, our creation here could have really long-lasting impact and maybe more impact than any of us will ever know. So let's put a few phones together, and let's be clear, those phones have not stopped ringing. Ever since we've started, we have always, always had someone there to listen and someone there to talk to.
So as we wrap this conversation up, do you have a message to queer kids out there struggling?
I think it's important to tell, you know, past me and future me and the many young people who are out there just trying to get through a really hard night, that it's all about recognizing solidarity. It's going to feel like you're alone. And representation doesn't always have the young person in the wheat fields of Kansas, right? It's important to recognize that what we see on television or what we read in books or what we see on the news is not the whole story, because we get to write our own story. We are our own identity, our own love interests, our own adventures. That is something that I think is really important for us to remember on the hard days, that the superheroes that we watch on television have moments where they don't know if they can make it, right? Captain America or Captain Marvel, look up with
Thank
a little
you for
bit of dejection.
Captain Marvel, the lesbians appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome. I got you.
Yes, yes.
So there's going to be the days that it really is hard. It's really hard to be you. But as they say in High School Musical, we're all in this together. Yes, I had to bring it in. I'm a huge
Yes,
testament
oh
to
my gosh.
In. That is how I think we need to make sure that we're doing it. It's about solidarity. We're all in this together.
Amazing.
And that it's going to be moments of loneliness, but that in the end, we find our families not as we are given them, but as we find them.
That is a perfect message to end on. Sam, is there any way that people can stay in touch with you and the Trevor Project before we go? Any links you want to plug before we say goodbye?
Sure thing. You can always find help at thetrevorproject.org/help. And of course, if you ever need to reach us, we are only a call, a text, or a chat away. You can find all that information at thetrevorproject.org/help. Social media-wise, we can always bring you a smile with @TrevorProject. And again, I'm Sam Brinton. I use they and them as my pronouns. I serve as the Vice President of Advocacy and Government Affairs at The Trevor Project. And just know that I'm there fighting for you.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate having you on the pod. Have a wonderful day, everyone. Follow the Trevor Project, follow Sam, and stay tuned for future work from the Trevor Project coming soon.
Thanks, y'all.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Lavender U. Our show is produced by Goal 17 Foundation, and our theme song is Love Line by the one and only Zolita. We release new episodes every other Thursday, so make sure you like, rate, and subscribe on Spotify, YouTube, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. And follow us on social media too. We are at Lavender U Pod, that's Y-O-U, on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you're a queer person out there who's just feeling alone or sad or anxious or like no one in the world understands what it's like, know that you are not alone. Lavender U is a community of people who love and accept you, and our DMs on social media are always open if you need to talk. Send us a message anytime. We are here for you. See you next episode, and until then, long live the gays!